Okay, I'm pretty much as
Okay.
close as I can get.
So
Maybe I should talk
Mark
louder,
needs
or
to talk loud.
yeah.
Or can is there any way to turn
Yeah.
Mark's the number two thing
Okay.
seems low, that's all. I totally just panicked. Sorry to bother you.
Someone knocking. Come
It
in.
is all the way up.
Come in.
The gain, the very top, it's on, you know where it says M2? It's on, I can't see it because it's too dark, but it's yeah, like it's like 2. It's like 2 o'clock. Oh, okay.
Hello?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds better. Okay, go
Oh,
ahead,
okay,
go
can you
ahead.
hear me? This is kind
Yeah,
of how
much
I
better.
normally talk,
Much
and
better.
okay.
Okay, great. Thanks a billion. Bye.
Okay.
How you doing? My name is Doug Lisa.
Yeah.
Yes, I suppose you're
Oh, I
streaming from the
forgot about
show,
you.
and
Come on in.
today, my wife's running a little late because of the trains.
It's okay.
How you doing? Good, good.
Hey!
Hi, Mark.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit, and I'm Dr. Lisa, and I give a shit. Okay, so we're having, I'm just gonna be, you're not hearing?
No, but it's okay.
I'm just gonna be,
Oh, no, yeah. That's fine.
candid and say we have a little bit of a shit show here. Somebody was using this studio, and then it made me nervous. And you know how neurotic I am. I panicked a little when I got back on, and then I called Tom, and Tom fixed everything, and we're good now. But I didn't tell our guests that we're being shadowed today. And who are we being shadowed by? Come here. It's a good-looking guy. I don't know, but you can shadow me anytime. Tell us about your show. Go ahead. It's another show. You know, we just started season four, so we have another show here, and one of the new people, whose name is Steve, did he's going to tell you all about it. Okay, come on. Hurry up. We're having dead air. You can't fuck around.
This is Dayron. My show is going to be called Kicking It With the Joneses. It's going to be a hybrid show. We're going to be talking about music, politics, just everything in general.
Okay, tell them the time.
Oh.
What day? What time? Come on, man.
All right. It will start November 15th. The time is going to be every Tuesday, 6 to 7.
Okay. And if he screws up the tech, you can yell at me, I guess. Okay. So anyway, welcome. Sit over there. That's Mark Dean Vaca, who is our guest today. Anyway, let's focus on Mark because I am so excited that Mark Dean Vaca is here. It's kind of it, I feel honored. I do. I really
Oh,
do.
that's
I feel
nice.
honored that because Mark got in touch with me knowing that he was coming to New York and he wanted to hang out and see some of our old friends and stuff like that. And I was honored and flattered, Mark. I want you to know that. I
Wow.
couldn't be happier. So the deal is, I'll just explain to you a little bit how I know Mark. I've known Mark since 1996,
Yeah, roughly.
and he, I, w Mark and I were in this sort of program for sort of fledgling, not quite fledgling, but artists that were wanted to learn how to market their work called Artists in the Marketplace program. At that point, it was run by Jackie Battenfield. It was really, really special. It was a real special program to be in, and that was a very special year. And there were, what, maybe 12 people in the program?
Something like that. Yeah, I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, but we became really tight-knit group, and we would have meetings every week on our own, and we wound up doing this really awesome show together called Take This Job and Shove It at Here Arts Center. And so it's almost like we're sort of, it's almost like we are college, almost like college friends on a certain level, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so Mark is one of the people who probably has done, Mark, I think in our year you might have done the best art career wise. I really think
Well,
so. Is that possible?
career-wise, I don't know. I think I came into it maybe with a little bit more than the other guys, but then I know that, like, I know that Lane Twitchell, you know, did really well at that time, and his work really changed. And but yeah, I mean, I had already had a show at the Drawing Center at that point.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, Mark is actually super crazy talented. Oh, I mean, that kind of actually helped. So his work is really interesting. I'm going to have him tell you about it because I could do that, but it's much less efficient. On the Facebook page announcing Mark, in the you can see his work there and his website and stuff like that if you're listening and you don't know his work and you want to see it. But it's just really great. And one of my memories of Mark, really making a home run for the team was he got the what do you call it, the entire cafe to do a full-on installation throughout the all four walls.
Walls, the floor, the ceiling. You're talking about PS1,
the first Greater New York show. Yeah, so that was the crossover into the big time for you. But I don't know. So, Mark, tell us a little bit about where your work and your career are now, because I don't really, I don't know all the details.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dr. Lisa. So nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh,
I'm
so
super excited. This whole trip, I came out to sort of reconnect. I haven't been in New York in a couple of years, and sort of where I'm at in my career right now, I have, a few different kinds of shows up in LA. It's been a real busy summer with doing big installations at different venues, large to small, but I'm not represented by a gallery at the moment, and so that's kind of what it's been about. This sort of fall actually is really trying to show some new work, trying to reconnect with people.
Can I ask you a question? I find that really interesting because, I mean, I know how powerful your work is and I know that how well regarded it is, and you've shown it a lot of museums, right?
I've had my share of museum
I'm wondering why you don't have a gallery. Is it because the work is more public and it's not what you normally have? I mean, it could easily be in a gallery. Or why the fuck don't you have a gallery? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
Well, thank you. Well, that's kind of been the topic. It's kind of, I had a gallery in New York. I showed here early 2013 with Kristen Tierney, who I love, and she ended up taking on a partner in her gallery, and so I don't know, that may have been the reason that we, kind of stopped working together. And then I was showing with Western Project in L.A. until about a year and a half ago when they closed after like a 12-year run. And I think this is what everyone's been talking about, is how the sort of mid-level galleries are closing. There's in New York as well. I can't remember the one gallery that, everyone was really surprised closed, but the market has just been really, really sort of rough for the last year or so.
Okay, so Mark, you're making all of us feel better because you're at like the top. We don't even think of you as like in the middle level. We think of you as like the top level. Wow. And if you're having that problem, then everyone's having that problem. But you're having, I'm shocked you're having that problem.
Well, thank you. No, but it's true. When this happens, obviously, when galleries like that close, then that puts more people out looking for opportunities, and it makes the competition even harder. Mm-hmm. And so supposedly, the starting out level galleries are they're able to get by because their overhead is so low. And then the high-end galleries, obviously, they can sell one artwork and they could buy their whole building,
Right, of course.
They don't have that. It's not as affected by fluctuations. And also people are, the blue chip, the high-end stuff is more of an investment. So there's more of a market and all that,
Right, resale value. But also, don't you think part of it is that the cost, because of the art fair craziness, that the cost of running a gallery has gone up because you can no longer just have a storefront?
Yes. Right. Yeah. And I was thinking about that too.
Stupid.
There's because, sort of the popularity of the art fairs happening all over and also the advent of the internet and just other things and the economy, you know, the struggling economy. Mm-hmm. But definitely those galleries, those mid-level galleries can't afford to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it, but you have to do it if you, you know, so it's kind of a catch-22.
Catch-22.
Yep.
So, well, if it got your ass into the East Coast, then mm-hmm. that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So can you explain your work a little bit? It has so many, it's, let me just say this. It's fun. It has, often a comic book sensibility. Mm-hmm. I just want people to understand, I want you to explain it, but I want people to understand that it's a kind of work that anyone that is so likable. I mean, it is. It's not like simple work, but it's a kind of work. It's not like, what the fuck is that? Mm. It's a kind of work you look at and whatever it is, it's very relatable and it has always has a very strong and positive, like, fun. It's fun. That's what the word is. Mark's work is fun to look at. Under any circumstances, it's just pure fun. So you go and explain it.
Well, I mean, just sort of like, you know, taking off from that point, I do remember specifically when I was pretty young that I wanted my work to be something that could be enjoyed by people that didn't have an art education or people that did, or, you know, I wanted it to be able to be enjoyed by, you know, a lot of different audiences and not be exclusive like so much of art is, and the art world is kind of built on exclusivity in that way, you know, that, but I was a big fan of, like you said, well, comic books as a kid and pop culture. And then, you know, when I went to art school and sort of discovered what pop art was, specifically Ed Ruscha was a huge influence, and just thinking or seeing that could be art, whereas I didn't really know anything about art at that point. But yeah, I mean, that's been always been part of what I like and has influenced me. Yeah.
So did you have, how did you get involved in art as a kid? Did you have artists in your family or what did your parents do? I forget. I know we've had this story, this conversation, but.
So my dad is a musician. I mean, he's an engineer, but he, as a young person, he was a trumpet player and he grew up in New Orleans and he was a jazz musician. And that's really what he probably should have done with his life is just done that. But of course, his parents wanted him to do something practical. So he became an engineer.
Do you think he could have made a living?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
For sure. Yeah. And and he, you know, he still plays. And when I was a kid, he would be playing gigs on the weekends and, you know, that stuff.
That's so cool.
And I think my mom had some talent for drawing. And they always really encouraged me. And when I was, I remember specifically being in the second grade and copying a drawing from some magazine or something and the other kids going, ooh, you're a good artist.
You could draw.
Right,
yeah,
you're
you
good.
Could draw.
So you know, that strokes
you
your
real,
ego, right?
And
it sort of gives you an identity. And I'm like, oh, really? I'll keep doing this because that feels good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kept doing it. I think it also fit my personality to just sort of be in my room with like mm-hmm. a friend drawing or something instead mm-hmm. of, you know, being super gregarious and doing something, mm-hmm. you know, very public.
Mm-hmm. And what else was I going to say? So drawing was something that you always did as a kid. And I had a question and then I lost my train of thought. So let's just go. Let's just go with that.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to say also, you know, you seem, Mark... You've created a very stable, what appears to me as a very stable life for yourself on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that really impressive because you don't see it in a bunch of creative, you don't see it in every creative person. And I think that is a gift that you have somewhere in your nature, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. which I think has really helped fuel your career. Would you say so?
Yeah, and you know, actually it does go back to my parents in a way too, because they had a retail store when I was a kid. So it was a women's clothing store, but it kind of showed me this whole side of the world about buying and selling and sort of inspired me into sort of more of an entrepreneurial spirit.
Right.
And so that may have something to do with it. And then I also, you know, I ended up working for a lot of galleries as mm-hmm. a young artist, and sort of mm-hmm. learning that business and seeing how things work mm-hmm. And treating it like a business on a certain level, you know, as far as, you know, right. your taxes and all that. So, right.
And you grew yeah. up in California,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I grew up in the Bay Area, and I went to art school at Otis in L.A. Mm-hmm. in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Then, oh, that must yeah. have been fun.
It was, yeah, definitely, yeah. And then I moved to New York in 91. And
do you know people from that time?
Yeah.
Who were you in school with?
Oh, let's
anyone
see.
Anyone we would have heard
anyone
of?
Anyone you would have heard of? Yeah, I'm trying to ask a good question. From my class, no one's coming.
Well, look
to
it
mind,
up. You know what? But... what? I'll get my producer to like get back
okay,
to us on
there
that.
You go.
Okay.
Yes. Get,
yeah, because you know we have a big staff here, and I'll just get somebody on that. But one of the things about Mark that really impresses me, Mark, is that you, from at least from my vantage point, have like married an awesome person mm-hmm. and have had a really like not just productive but enriching mm-hmm. it seems like mm-hmm. you guys have really been such a great team and have made a great life together.
Yeah, you know, thank you. Yeah, she's great. Lauren's great, and she when we met she was sort of more in the corporate world, and but by the time, like a few years later, that was sort of, you know, it was in the tech world, and it was kind of what she was doing was kind of being phased out, and it just dovetailed with sort of the work that I was doing, and finally, that's the point where I was able to actually start making a living from my work, and that's actually also around the time that my son was born, and so these things are like
Luca,
yeah, Luca, and it just sort of. I don't know. It's just interesting how that happened. I don't know if it just happened accidentally or coincidentally, or if we made it happen somehow because we had to. But
it worked out. It probably, I bet there's some kind of like, you know, sensibility that you two, you know, probably like really supported each other, and it kind of fell into place. You probably read the you probably read the tea leaves without knowing it on some level, right? That happens to people.
And, you know, and Lauren has always been super supportive, so that helps a lot. You know,
right?
And actually, the other interesting thing is, so this thing that when I remember before. This is a story about when Lauren and I were just going out. And,
mm-hmm.
and
how did you guys meet?
Well, we met through mutual friends here in New York when I first moved here.
Mm-hmm.
And
did she have artist friends?
She did. Yeah, she had some artist friends. And actually, one of them was a guy that I went to school with.
At Otis?
Yeah. Oh. And he was living here.
Shout out to...
Bradley Greer. Bradley Greer.
Is he still doing art?
I think so. But he's also a high school art teacher. And he lives kind of near where I do.
Oh, nice.
So Lauren and I would go to openings because she would, you know, we were a couple and she'd want to go, you know, we'd be opening, she'd want to go, right? So,
right.
But it would always I always felt uncomfortable because I felt responsible for her happiness when we go to these openings, right?
Right,
so you
right,
couldn't just,
right.
you know, and so it was just, and then I also didn't really like, oh, who do I talk to? Like, I'm just trying to force something to happen, right?
Right.
But then when our son was born and she was staying home with him and I would go to the openings by myself, I was able to just go wherever, you know, you could go all the way across town and spend 5 minutes somewhere and then go somewhere
right,
else if
right.
nothing was happening. So actually that's when things really kind of took off for me. And as far as the networking aspect of it goes, which was something that led directly to that PS1 show that you were talking about.
Oh.
And it was an AIM artist too. It was Marietta Hoferer.
Oh yeah.
Who I saw at an opening in Brooklyn at mm-hmm. Larry Walczak's place.
Oh yeah.
And
we saw Larry last weekend.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And,
shout out Larry.
And she said, oh yeah, did you drop off your slides to PS1, the deadline is tomorrow. And
and
I knew nothing about
really?
It. Yeah. So I got my slides together the next day, brought him in, turned into that show, which was one of the kind of a real spectacle, you know, a big kind of a spectacular thing.
Oh, it was great.
To be in.
Yeah. It was, well, it was, I mean, it was great curation of giving you and of seeing you in that space, and it was great work. So, but yeah, it was really good. It was a great show, wasn't it, all
yeah.
along?
Yeah, I mean, it was a
I think Beth Campbell
show.
Was in that show. I think that's the first time I saw her work. I'm a huge fan of hers. But anyway, so that's interesting, though, that, you know, networking is definitely part of it. But networking is part of every... And, you know, politics, people say politics is part. Politics is just finding people you know and get along with. So, Luca, how has what's it like being a dad? Is Luca interested in art, or like how does he what's his role in, you know, in your world as an artist?
Well, you know,
us other artists.
Yeah, well, he's never been that much into visual art per se. He was into music for a while, playing guitar, and he's always been into sports. He's a big soccer player. He plays on two teams, and he's very good. And but you know, the through line, I guess, would be the fact that he does maybe have more of that entrepreneurial spirit, where he has his own. He's starting his own streetwear line.
Really? So how old is he?
Shout out to Madolescent, madolescent.com. There's a plug, right?
Oh yeah. So what's that?
That's his brand, and he has Madolescent.
M-A-D,
just like adolescent with an M on the beginning.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
So him and his buddy Isaac Ray, and they have. They design their own shirts and they print them, you know, and they're picking up some hats. They're going to be dropping some hats, some caps.
How old is he now?
He's 17, almost 17.
And so he's a junior?
He's a senior now.
Senior? And how did he get, he's the one who's clearly, now we're getting to the point, he should be on here. How did he get started?
They had an idea. He's been into the streetwear thing for a while, and I've actually exposed him to a lot of people in that world because I know a lot of people
work,
in that world.
And I remember early on you were in the collection of the head guy at Nike and stuff like that, and you made Nike sneakers, which Phil still has.
Oh right,
custom
that's great.
Sneakers.
Cool.
Yeah, he loves those sneakers.
Oh good. Our friend Stash, who
he's
Subware and Recon, and then, you know, I did stuff for Nike for Hurley, and this other brand, Mishka, was one of Luca's favorite brands. And,
oh, wow.
And I actually helped him get a job working for one of the owners, Greg Rivera. So he's learning that.
Oh,
he's kind of learning that trade, which is cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
And he makes money on this?
Yeah.
And how does he get the stuff made?
Well, they buy the shirts and they screen. They do it all themselves. Like, it's all very hands-on. So they screen print the shirts, you know, in the studio, and they design it on...
studio?
No, they just either at our house or at Isaac's house.
The studio.
The factory.
At their factory. Right. Their big factory.
Backyard, yeah.
Well, they have a factory. What do you mean? They have a factory. It's a business.
That's right. So... and they have, you know, they have an intern and
an intern.
You know, Danahi is
the intern. Do you think is he going to go to college?
That's the big question right now. You know, that's been a big topic of conversation. I think that he's not that excited about going to college because he doesn't have a subject per se that he's that crazy about studying right now.
Right.
And we're trying to push him into like maybe doing more on the entrepreneurial tip for college programs, which they do have. So we're proceeding as if, and we're going to see what happens. And if he ends up deferring a year or not going, I mean, I'm not going to, you know, force him to go, obviously. But he's got all the grades and everything he needs. So it's kind of up
to
him.
So he does well in school.
He's always done very well. Yeah, he's got a 4.0 in high school. And
so do you think one of the things that he's gotten, because you've been kind of a work-at-home dad?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
So have you been around him more than Lauren day to day?
It depends. I mean, there were times. I think that's one of the other keys to the success in certain ways is that we've been flexible enough to trade off when we need to, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if I have to travel somewhere to do a show, then she's at home with him and vice versa. Like if she goes off to do a birth, you know, she's a doula.
Right.
And so she'll be gone to do delivery
for a few days.
And then I'm, you know, home. So that's, I think, been really good for him. And I'm home in the studio every day, you know, unless I'm on the road somewhere.
So do you think that part of what Luca's absorbing is maybe a good work ethic?
Well, I hope so. I mean, it's, you know, I Maybe. I hope so. I hope
or,
so.
Or
well, Lauren. Lauren is actually Lauren is a very hard worker, and she's always been a good like a good example in that way. I'm always at least in the studio. Like I'm not like sitting in front of the TV or anything.
Right.
But I'm not as I never feel as productive as I could be. You know. Although
well,
I don't know. People say I work hard, so I don't know.
I think everybody feels that way. It's also like weird as a creative person. Sometimes I think that there's like if you're working on something creative, you're living with it constantly, and so you actually aren't doing anything or you're doing something else, but some, you know, it's like if you added up all the times you had an idea and wrote them all down and that would
Yeah.
You could actually rationalize a few hours of work.
Well, you know what, actually I what I say is that I'm always working and I'm never working, you know,
because
it's like when I'm working, I'm really just doing what I want to do.
Right.
So that's not work. But, you know, but even in my time off, I'm thinking about it or you know, like you said, you know, it's the ideas. So
it's a lifestyle.
Yeah,
it's truly a lifestyle. Yeah. So is so that must be really fun to see some of that stuff reflected in Luca, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you're probably right. Yeah, it's probably just him seeing me doing something that is not the typical 9-to-5 thing, I think is probably – you know, inspired him to go for that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, he's modeled it. Is he like, does he go to a lot of like your shows, your openings and stuff?
You know,
has he done that?
He hasn't been going as much just because he's super busy and, you know.
He's got his own business. He doesn't need, you know, he can't be fucking around with his parents.
But, you know, he's got a car and girlfriend and he's got, you know, soccer and all that other stuff. And
a car and a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I know. So, but you know, we would go, like I would take him to Comic-Con and we would do all that kind of stuff, which was really fun. But now he's kind of, he's got his own thing.
But is he like, look, look, my dad, you know, go to like an art opening and does that inspire him? You think like one of your shows or something like that? Or is it just something he takes for granted at this point?
Probably takes it for granted on a certain level, but I think that he appreciates it and gets it and sees. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the other thing, like, I know that, well, speaking of this whole thing about, you know, growing up the son of an artist is that, it inspired this sort of other mode of working, but he also sees the struggle, you know, because it is a constant struggle. So I think he's much more interested in making money than I was, because my parents always said, you know, just do what you want. Don't worry about the money and just do what you love. And, you know, we get by and it's always like, you know, we never know where the next check is coming from or the next sale is coming from. But I guess we've gotten used to that over the years. But I think that he is sort of more interested in making a better
doing better. He wants to do better.
Maybe have a little more security than and you know luxuries and things like that.
Yeah, I'm guessing also that he sees, even though he may not care whether maybe no matter how it affects him, I'm sure he sees that it stresses you guys out just like it does
exactly.
And I want to say that's true of any, not just like if you're a painter, artist, person, but anybody that has a freelance business of any kind, really,
and,
you know,
well,
whatever
you know,
it is.
Oh, and
that
by
you're
the
making.
Way, nowadays, even if you have a job, that's not security, right?
This is true. You can,
that's the thing. So, you know, people like now, if you have a job and you lose your job, and then you got to find a new job, and that sometimes can be really hard. And for me, I've had to find a job because I've never really had a job.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
it's
just my normal kind of existence.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I've never really had a full-time job ever.
So that's that is pretty cool that you've managed.
I've had part-time jobs.
I told you he was a good artist, guys. I'm going to just remind people that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn and that it's Dr. Lisa on Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit with my guest, accomplished artist, painter, Mark Dean Vega from L.A. So let's see if we can get to the therapy part of the session.
Okay.
So how is there, I mean, Your life in many, many ways sounds completely ideal. You have a lovely wife, a hardworking child, a really great, extremely established and rich career. But so what is your like trip to New York? Is anything being brought up for you or?
No, but actually, you know, I will say this about that, yes, the problem with that. Okay. Yeah. Everything is great. I have everything to be thankful for. And actually when you do have all of those things and you're still depressed, that's, you know, then it makes it actually worse in a way because you're like, you can't point to like, you know, some terrible thing that is like, you know, it's like, then you feel even, I don't know. So I do get, actually I've suffered from
depression
and I think that it's actually this whole, believe it or not, seasonal affective disorder, even in LA, that it's been getting worse over the years.
LA? Even? Yeah. Wow.
Well, you know, as far as the seasons.
Yeah, I get it.
We have plenty of sunshine. You know, people think that maybe it's...
Yeah, I'm just shocked because I didn't think that seasonal affective disorder happened in LA. I just thought everybody was walking around all happy and blonde.
Well, I don't know, but I think that's what affects me, and it seems to get worse every year. And I remember living in New York, and I can't stand the holidays. I hate the holidays, even though my son was born on Christmas Day, which you know. But but I think it's not the holidays. I think it's my sort of depression that I would go into every fall or winter, and I've noticed it more and more and really tried to get a handle on it this year.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you don't think there's anything like in your background, like with your family, did you have pretty happy Christmases?
Yeah. I mean, I don't remember. I always remember Christmas and the holidays being really fun and really nice. But I think that there may have been some depression. And yeah, definitely it was, you know, my grandmother or different, you know, and there's, you
what
know.
What about your grandmother?
Well, I just know that I remember she, especially towards the end of her life, she was really had a hard time and had a lot of, she was on a lot of medications and she was very unhappy, you know, and as a little kid, she was great. And then she kind of seemed to
wither.
Just, yeah.
Is wither a good word?
Well, I guess, I don't know what it was. I honestly
what
don't
What kind
know.
Of illness do you know?
No.
Probably just old age, physical,
maybe,
mental.
But it seemed like it was something that kind of happened, and it wasn't that gradual.
Do you remember her as being part of the joy of Christmas when you were a kid?
Well, they didn't live near. I don't think we spent Christmases with that part of the family. They were in New Orleans, but we would visit them once in a while, or they would visit us.
So, if she wasn't around, then how did her decline affect you?
I think it was just sort of seeing the change, the dramatic change, you know, and maybe it was more gradual than I know, but it may be because we didn't see each other that often.
So what did you go there one time and you were like, what happened to grandma?
You know, I don't remember that specifically. No, I think I was pretty young.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. The holidays it just became, I honestly think it was more to do with this seasonal thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't
know. So have you ever been, are you on antidepressants?
No, I've been trying to take other routes, with, you know, other like supplements and sort of more natural remedies.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I'm not even qualified literally as a psychotherapist and much less qualified to prescribe drugs, but I know that, I mean, I'm a big fan and a lot of people, I was just having this conversation last weekend where everybody was like, oh my God, if it wasn't for thank God for antidepressants. But I do appreciate, and I think it's quite likely that that it is a physical chemical imbalance as opposed to like, you know, something wrong or some, because it's not really linked to any circumstance.
Yeah.
So, and it would make sense that it would be any kind of depression would get worse as we all get older, right? Because that just compounds itself. So
the symptom is just sort of like, I sometimes end up just like being like a zombie where I know I have so many things to do and that need to be done and work to do. And it's just like, I'm just like staring at this list of things and just, you know, finding it very difficult to even tackle, you know, the easiest one, you know.
So you have a hard time getting motivated.
Yeah.
Or moving.
Yeah.
Or,
I mean,
and does that extend to like even getting out of the house or anything like that?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's just like, yeah, mm-hmm. definitely. Like, you know, you mm-hmm. don't want to go do anything. And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, I'm being candid for whatever mm-hmm. I know. Mm-hmm. Antidepressants, and it seems like you think so too. I'm sure a lot of people. I mean, that seems like the obvious answer. So, what is it that you're not comfortable taking them? I mean, not that you're alone in that.
I think that it's more like, well, let's try everything else first.
Okay,
just as far as like side effects and all that. And so I'm doing all these other herbal stuff, you know, like mm-hmm. St. John's wort and, mm-hmm. you know, vitamin D. And, mm-hmm.
Is that new that you've been trying that?
Well, I did it last year. And then this year I was like, I sort of doubled down on it when it got to, I started feeling it. Mm-hmm. And I think it really helped. Also, like, you know, light therapy.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I got one of those. Yeah. Things have you used that?
I
think that helps.
Yeah, and I, you know, and I also exercise and trying, you know,
a lot.
So I hike actually up in the hills where I live. It's really, you know, really, really nice place to mm-hmm. To hike. So I try to do that every mm-hmm. morning if I can.
Mm-hmm. It motivates you to do some, take charge of it anyway.
Yeah.
So, what about light therapy? Because I got one of those things, mm-hmm. and I thought it helped. Because I thought I got that too. Does that help you?
It's hard to say, you know. I mean, it's one of those things that obviously it would take a while for it to start having an effect. It's not just going to be instant, but
right.
And it's gradual. I don't know. Like it's also I'm doing all these other things at the same time, so I don't know which one is
right,
being most effective.
Right.
But you know, it's easy enough just to put that on for mm-hmm. an hour or whatever while I'm, you know, doing other stuff.
Yeah. And, right.
Yeah. But yeah, so.
Well, I mean, I kind of, you know, I was an inpatient on a study on depression in the hospital. And I was also, from that, they put me on a study on Prozac in the 80s, in the early days. Mm-hmm. And they really did all these, like, tests. They did a spinal tap and all these tests. And then I had a meeting with the team of doctors that I'd done all the, you know, I was in a, you know, they gave me intravenous stuff and I don't even know. I was in literally in the hospital. You know, it really does seem from everything they said that the way they explained it, that it really is a medical, you know, a mm-hmm. brain chemistry mm-hmm. problem.
Sure.
So, I don't, you know, I mean, and then I started taking antidepressants and it really changed my life. Really?
No, that's amazing. I know there's definitely, you know, a place for it. And I'm afraid that it's something that has become maybe overprescribed for a lot of people.
A lot of people
and a lot of young people. And
feel
like that's kind of dangerous.
Yes.
And, you know, I have nothing against, you know, any kind of drug treatment for any problem.
Right,
you know?
Right. Is it the easy way? It is the easy way out for a lot of people. It does seem like an easy way out, though.
Well, I've been very tempted to do it a number of times.
Mm-hmm. And does it seem like an easy way out to you?
That's not the issue for me. If it was an easy way out and I thought it would work mm-hmm. and that it wouldn't have any other effects, mm-hmm. I would be totally. I have no issue with mm-hmm. it. Maybe it's just I've never pulled the trigger on that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I don't really think it has. I mean, it hasn't for me, really.
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, honestly. But yeah.
Have you been to a therapist or psychiatrist?
I used to go when I was living in New York. Yeah.
Well, you have to because otherwise they make you move out of town if you don't go.
Right. Yeah.
Especially if you're an artist.
That was actually a really, really good thing. And that's another thing that when I get into that space with my head, I think I need to do that again. But it's just, I guess it's just that thing of just starting it.
Yeah,
because
you know, it's
finding
like
a person and then going, it's that whole thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So and it's also not cheap.
Right.
You know,
right.
As we know. Yeah. So, yeah. Well, if that's your biggest problem, you know, how to how to balance your St. John's wort with your light therapy, I would say you're doing like damn well.
Well, you know, it's, I think it helped. And, you know, actually, so, you know, coming here, you know, is, you're, I guess maybe because I'm not in my sort of typical everyday routine.
Right.
I'm not feeling that at all.
Right.
But also when I know I did some, I traveled to do a couple of mural festivals. I went to, this was like last year, I went to Hawaii.
That must have been great.
It was great, but I think I was still depressed.
You were depressed in Hawaii on a like it was a huge commission.
It wasn't huge. It was like I really only worked for a few days, and I was there for almost 2 weeks. But
and you did a mural, like how big? Just tell them.
Well, okay. Well, it was just like it was about 9 feet by 40 feet or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a quick. You know, I did something simple because I hadn't really done stuff exterior, kind of, and on the street. And it's more of a street art festival mural.
I got it.
But I mean, I was staying in a great hotel on the beach, and I like had to force myself to get into the water like one day, you know.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was like, I don't want to go. And then also in Tokyo that same year, it was kind of the fall of that year that I kind of, I went there and it was kind of like, Tokyo.
Well, you know, we all get such, I mean, it sounds so, we all get these big expectations. Do you wind up feeling like, a lot of pressure on the work. This is what, like, this is how I would relate to if I went there and I was upset, the way that I would, my version would be like, very much the way you're talking about it. Like, I can't believe I'm in a nice place. I'm doing this great thing and I'm so depressed, but, which I could easily see myself as, but I would be depressed because I would be thinking that my work sucked or that they hated it or that somebody was disappointed in me. I would be like really down. I would be, my self-esteem, I'd get stressed and then my self-esteem would go into like a bad place. For that had no real basis on logic, but I would be dealing with managing that.
Right. No, I hear you.
Do you get that?
Well,
you seem pretty confident. Well, I mean, I would be confident if I were you.
Well, I felt confident in that I've done a lot of those things.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, what I'm doing, but I was a little stressed about, like I said, doing this thing on an exterior wall, excuse me, where the surface is not, you know, I'm used to doing these smooth surfaces.
Sure.
So it was a little bit different. I was kind of had a little anxiety about that. But then it's just kind of thing. I just jump in and do it. And then once I get started, it's
great.
Fine.
Yeah. You know? And you enjoy doing it. I mean, you get lost in it. Once you get in the mode, you're gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's it until you're done and it's great. And so I just wanted to know, I mean, you were feeling good about the work. That wasn't part of it.
Right. No, I don't think that had
anything
to do
with it. Okay. Because that would have been me. I would have been really anxious.
Yeah, I don't know. It's it's a strange thing to, you know, just sort of.
Well, it's also the expectations we all have of that. We're supposed to be like, especially like, you know, you look at somebody who like you, who, you know, has a nice, you know, nice life. And then everybody's like, well, Mark's killing it. He must be jumping up and down all the time. And, you know, we're human beings. Do you miss your family? What's it like? Does like traveling without your family, is that, does that affect you, your mood in any way in particular? I mean, you're kind of used to it and they're very self-sufficient. I mean, especially your son, he seems like he's in charge there, but you're working for, I know you're working for Luca, but so what about that? Being away from them?
I mean, it's, you know, it's, it was definitely hard when he was little because, you know, you would go away and he would have been changed by the time you came back, you know, a few weeks later.
And kids hate it when you're little, when they're little and you go, right?
Yeah, it's, and I remember a point where I felt like I don't want to be away longer than a couple of weeks or something just because of that. And now it's not so much because, you know, like he is much more independent and Lauren doesn't have to, you know, really worry
not
about
the pressure.
Taking, you know, not the pressure of, you know, doing everything for him and driving him around and doing all
and
that
he stays
stuff.
Home by himself, right? No problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And he's got his really good friend, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah. So but you know, I mean, it would have been great if they could have come, and they both wanted to come on this trip for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Lauren just went to see her family in North Carolina, and Lucas got school.
Yeah, but I mean, how do you feel when you're not there? Is it like you went to Hawaii by yourself?
Yeah.
So is that disorienting? Do you feel less? I mean, I tell you the truth, like the way I picture it for myself, I'd be like, yay, I'm free. I'm in Hawaii. Well, I'm going to go wild. That's how I would be probably. Yeah. But how is it for you when you're away? No. Do you feel a little bit off?
No. I mean, it can be, you know, definitely those feelings. Yeah, it depends on like, yeah, definitely when I'm going and it would be an adventure and exciting. And I don't think that... No, I don't. I enjoy it.
You enjoy it.
Well,
yeah,
I also enjoy.
You're happy to.
Well, I
think
that's
not. That's not what's put. You don't feel like you're off your pins if they're not there.
No, I think that's another thing about balance.
Yeah.
That, you know, not only the work, the taking care of the child and doing all that, but I always believed that, you know, couples should have life together and life apart in a way. And that, And so, like I said, Lauren just went away. She goes on her trips with her friends sometimes, not as often as I travel, but usually I'm traveling for business. You know?
Right, yeah. No, and, I go on my own vacations, believe you me. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So here's a question. So did you guys ever think about having another kid ever? I mean, not that you're going to do that anytime now, but I mean, was that a conscious choice? Because that's a really personal question. I'm just going to put it out
there.
That's
fine. No, you know, I was definitely like, I never really wanted to have more than one.
Were you ambivalent about having one? I mean, I know
You know, sure. You know, I remember growing up as a kid and always thinking that that was just the natural thing to do, and that's what everybody did, and that's what I was going to do. And then, and then there came a point where I was like, wait a minute, I don't know, is that really the? You know, you start thinking about it, and it. We definitely went through a whole period,
especially
of trying
as an
to
artist.
That out. Of course, absolutely,
yeah.
Of course, that's a huge part of it. Like having to be responsible for.
And I always
person.
Say, my art is my children, and that's my priority. And I look at the world through that lens. So, I mean, art is your, you know, I get it. But go ahead.
Well, no, so we, you know, but we decided to do that. And then we found out, you know, we're probably, Lauren and I are probably related back in the old country.
Which old country? Italy?
Like Sicily, yeah.
Oh, you have that in common. That makes so much sense. Italians are so family oriented. Was your family?
But no, well, no, I was just saying, but we both have this rare sort of Mediterranean blood trait disease that's called thalassemia minor. And so we found out after we were trying to get pregnant, and we knew she had it, and I thought I had it. My doctor here in New York told me that I didn't have it, and then later he told me that I did.
Hmm.
But it's a thing. It's like an anemia. So if Luca had a 25% chance of getting thalassemia major, in which case he probably wouldn't have survived past.
Oh.
You know, his teen years or whatever.
Oh, my God.
This is like an anemia. So, and there was a 25% chance that he wouldn't have anything at all. And there was a 50% chance that he would be like us. It was just more of like a carrier.
Uh-huh.
So he ended up not getting it at all, which was amazing. But Lauren had to have these tests, like this chronic villi sampling or something, where it's kind of like an amnio procedure. But she had to have these tests sent off to Johns Hopkins to see, you know, if he had what he was going to get. And as it turns out, he was fine. But that also, that would definitely have prevented me from trying again for another child, right? Because there would have been that possibility.
So you're saying that you felt lucky that it worked out the way it worked out?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And you know, I wasn't necessarily interested in having another one, but that was just sort of the defining, you know, that was like, this is sort of like, okay, this is the sign that, you know, we should just quit while we're ahead.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But Lauren, you know, she's so involved with kids and babies.
Yeah, because Lauren's a doula, and she really, I don't know, you know, there's some women that, like, she seems really like, she's just so naturally nurturing.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember you guys used to have our group over. And Lauren is just the most, I don't know, there's some, I really, it's funny, I really have, She's somebody that really inspires a lot of warm feelings mm-hmm. in people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, she's like somebody that like you just connect to
yeah.
and you feel
everybody
like
everybody loves Lauren.
Everybody loves Lauren, and you just feel like she's going to take care of you yeah. no matter who
yeah.
you are,
yeah.
no, right?
She, absolutely.
It's weird.
Absolutely. It's true. Yeah.
She's obviously got an innate ability to be like a nurturer mom and yeah. all that. And she's a doula now, which mm-hmm. is also very much related to mm-hmm. birth. So mm-hmm. she must have really related. So what do you think got her interested in that? Do you think it was her own?
Well, it was her own birth. And she had one of our other friends who was actually married to who is married to J. Bradley Greer, the guy that I was telling you about how we met. Right. So his wife, Adrian, was a doula. I don't know if she still does it. But and so that, I think, kind of inspired Lauren to do that. I mean, Lauren didn't have a doula when she was pregnant, and mm-hmm. I think her birth would have been completely different. I mean, the birth was great. It was fine. Everything beautiful. But
mm-hmm.
It would have been done differently if she had a doula or had known
so
more.
So she had an experience and she kind of saw how to make it better.
Yeah.
It affected her, I guess.
Sure. Yeah.
And also, I guess all those tests must have heightened her awareness of mm-hmm. it as well, right?
Yeah.
So she did something positive
right.
with that.
Exactly. And then, you know.
Does Lauren ever get depressed? No. She doesn't seem like she ever gets depressed, does she?
I don't think she really gets depressed. Her thing is more about like anxiety. And so, you know, so, yeah, she's more of, you know, yeah, we're different in that way, I think.
I think anxiety is a form of depression, too.
Okay.
Well,
then the answer
that.
Is yes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't
but, you know,
know.
Everybody's
yeah.
got their thing. And, you know, it's just, yeah, mm-hmm. she thinks about things and worries a lot, mm-hmm. especially about Luca and about his,
yeah.
you know, his school and his soccer and his well-being and all that stuff. And it's easier for me just to say, well, he's going to be fine. You know? But she can't sort of let go of that.
But it also probably allows you to yeah. feel like everything's going to be yeah. fine because he yeah. has Lauren as
well.
Well,
that's for sure. No, you're absolutely right. I was like, okay, well, she's worrying about it enough for both of us. You know?
Oh.
So I don't have to worry. And she's got the Italian mother thing.
Yeah.
You know? So,
so it works out. That's yeah. nice. So let's talk about, we have 8 minutes left. Mm-hmm. So if there's anything you want to say, I mean, I was just going to ask you if being back in New York is evocative for you of anything, your early days here.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, just
what does it make? How do you feel about like what comes to mind?
Well, I'll get to say like I was, you know, we went to march in the Halloween parade and Daniel Davidson and Trisha Cayley.
Your friends.
Friends who I was staying with. And so I got there early down by Canal Street where the start of the parade is. And I walked around Tribeca, which is where I used to live in the early 90s when I first lived in New York. And I had a studio there on Leonard Street.
Whoa.
And it was just, you know, and that's actually where Lauren and I first sort of started dating, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of an anniversary for us, Halloween, the day of
Halloween.
Nice. It was 1993.
Mm-hmm.
But I was there and shared a studio with Jim Morphesis, who was an artist who was a professor of mine at Otis.
Oh, nice.
And, but that, it's just like walking around and there's not one thing around there that has, like not one business in that neighborhood that's still there mm-hmm. from those days.
Right. So that's all gone.
Everything is new. Everything is different. And, you know, I know this is the other like common topic of coming to New York is like, can mm-hmm. you believe how much has changed? Can you look at this? Mm-hmm. This is new. That's gone. And it's true. And it is interesting on a certain level, but then on the other hand, it's like, I don't know. I kind of get tired of that topic.
Yeah, you got to move. Like I always say, nostalgia is for losers. No, it's true. Well, that's one thing I've learned living here is that, you know, because I've lived here as a kid, I lived here till I was 8, and then I moved back right after college. I've been here forever. And if you don't look forward and like just, you know, just like, okay, well, that changed, but look how great this new thing is. And, you know, and I live in Bushwick now, and that is a big product of gentrification. And one thing you do have to learn, or one thing I think is really important for your mental health, I'll say that, is to really just accept that change and move on. That's not like that anymore because that's not relevant anymore. This is what's new and just move on.
Right. And the other thing is that I, you know, you have to think that, okay, we all want it to be the way we remembered it, you know, but the people that were like that had been there before us must have said the same thing. I mean, things are changing faster than ever, but you know, even you know, you still hear people talking about how Soho changed from what it was in the '70s, and it's like those people are still. It's like, yeah, how many times can you? You know?
I always think of Max's Kansas City because this is an example of Max's Kansas City, which could be the Mars Bar, which could be you know the Bottom Line, which could be any place. Mm-hmm. When I first moved to New York in 1978, I lived like two blocks away from Max's Kansas City. But at that point, no one went there anymore. Max's Kansas City was over. And so in other words, you could like when it finally got, I don't know, changed into whatever, it's a bank now probably, but you just, it wasn't Max's Kansas City anymore anyway.
It died.
Like CBGB's was over.
It wasn't CBGB's.
Right. So you wanted
to stay there and be there forever, but you don't want to go there anymore. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's like in Hollywood, I don't know if you know, Musso and Frank is a restaurant that it's beloved. It's been there, you know, it's like the oldest restaurant in Hollywood. And it's like an old school, old world place. And it's great, and I love the idea of it, but I never go there.
Right.
And I don't want it to ever go away. I just want it to be there.
Right, just in case.
You know?
Yeah, but I mean, I remember this. It really stuck with me. I would walk into Max's Kansas City, and I would think, like, this is sad. Look how run down this place is. I missed all the fun.
Right. No, I know. And I never went there, but I still, yeah, I have that
feeling.
Well,
it's probably
like,
at your young, you're young, well, little
younger.
Well,
I just feel
young,
like,
mean,
that,
whatever
I,
you
oh, that
would
have been so great to go to Max's Kansas City, but
it's
maybe
not there anymore.
I
and
know.
I do see a lot of people get stuck in that. And as a creative person, like I always say that if you get stuck in your quote, if you get a heyday and you get stuck in that, it's not good for your work at all.
Right.
And, you know, most artists that, you know, I feel like I have respect for are people who have like done something great and keep moving on.
Mm-hmm.
And progressing, and maybe like Joni Mitchell's a good example of that because she wound up doing like weird jazz and stuff, and maybe she's not as popular, although she's a freak now, I think, whatever, I don't know much about her anymore, but she's old. She ruined her voice through smoking, but anyway, she was somebody who I thought, well, she's doing what she wants, what's in her, she's developing, and so you know, like, let's develop and move on. That's the key.
That's a good.
That's what we're agreeing on.
Okay.
That. Yeah, that's good. So we have 2 minutes left, and I just want to say thanks again for being here.
My pleasure.
And I want people to make sure they go to your website and see your work. And it's markdeanveca.com, right?
That's right.
And you can also find it on my Facebook page and all that stuff. And
Instagram.
When I post this, I'll post. And your Instagram?
Yeah.
How many, would you have like a million followers? Or
no.
No, not yet. And is there anything you have coming up, maybe even in L.A.? Do you have anything in particular coming up? You probably have stuff going on all the time. But
it was really busy summer and fall in L.A. Those shows are kind of winding down.
So you have stuff up now, you know, but nothing coming up.
There's nothing, no, not
you know
big show coming.
Who was on this show? Genevieve Gaillard. Have you met her?
I don't think so.
Awesome. Her work is up at the African American Museum. That's a new museum out there, right?
Mm. Right. Yeah, I haven't been there yet.
Yeah. So just she has a whole bunch of photographs there. There's billboards of her outside and stuff like that. She's a really good photographer, sort of like in the Cindy Sherman school, but. Mm. You know, obviously she's taken it to her own place and sort of an Afrocentric great scene. I don't know. You have to go see it, Mark.
I will. I will try.
Okay. So anyway, you guys should listen to Dr. Lisa. Do you know that? Every Thursday, 2 to 3 p.m. live. Thanks for spending the time with me, and I hope you. I hope your mental health is good, and if it's not, go for a long walk. It always works. I'm telling you, right?
Right.
It's better than better than Prozac. Like that's what keeps my shit together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go for a walk.
And don't forget about your archive.
Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit.